Good morning. This is Carol Ventura, Executive Director of Rhode Island Housing. This is the August 15th, 2024 meeting of the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners. This meeting is also being made available telephonically for access by the public. Val Lingasamy, Assistant Director of IT, will provide information on this meeting.
Good morning. This is Val Lingasamy, Assistant Director of IT at Rhode Island Housing. This meeting will be recorded and available for review on the Rhode Island Housing website within 3 to 5 business days after the meeting. Except for specific Rhode Island Housing staff participating telephonically in the meeting, all callers will be muted during the meeting. To prevent any feedback or background noise, we ask the telephone participants to please mute your telephones if you are not speaking. If during the meeting anyone is having technical difficulties with audio or accessing the call, they should call 401-429-1430.
Good morning. This is Kelly Kenyon-Lavalle, Deputy General Counsel of Rhode Island Housing. All members of the Board of Commissioners are appearing in person this morning in keeping with the Rhode Island Open Meetings Act. Members of the public may also access the meeting via teleconference or attend in person according to their preference. If the teleconference is interrupted, we will stop the meeting until audio is restored. Chairman Pryor will preside this morning and will be voting by voice vote. Meeting participants, please state your name prior to speaking each and every time. Telephone participants, please mute your lines if you are not speaking. Now I will turn it over to Chairman Pryor to call the meeting to order.
Good morning, this is Stephen Pryor. I'm calling the meeting to order. It is 9:34 a.m. And Carol, may I ask you to come up the roll call, please?
Certainly. Commissioner McAllister.
Here.
Commissioner Barry.
Here.
Commissioner Womer.
Here.
Commissioner Pryor.
Here.
Commissioner Designee Cabral.
Here.
Chairman.
I'll introduce Board Action 1, which is the approval of the minutes for June 20th. Would you just take a look and see if there's any changes, any edits, any comments? If you've had the chance to re-look, I'll entertain a motion.
So moved, Jonathan Womer.
Is there a second?
Second.
Moved and seconded, Jonathan and Maria. One more shot at edits. Hearing none, Kelly, would you go ahead with that vote?
Absolutely. This is Kelly Kenyon-Lavalle. Commissioners, all those in favor of approving the minutes of the Board of Commissioners meeting held on June 20th, 2024, please say aye.
Aye.
I'm going to abstain. I was not here.
Absolutely. All those opposed, please say nay. For the record, the motion is approved with 4 affirmative votes and 1 recusal from Commissioner McAllister.
On to agenda item 2. Just some very brief remarks today. 2 items. One, I want to thank the team for good work on preparing the qualified allocation plan this year, the QAP, the substantial item on the agenda today. Carol, James, Ann, and the whole team, thank you for taking more than one round of input from this board, taking input from the public, compiling it well, and I think achieving further progress with this document and working together in this most recent era. We've a couple of rounds of revisions, and I think this document represents important priorities for our state and will help us produce more high-quality and affordable housing. So thank you. We look forward to the discussion on that. The second item, very briefly, even in his absence, I just want to recognize Treasurer James Diosa and wish him a happy birthday. He has another obligation at this time. With that said, on to agenda item 3, and that is the Executive Director's review of recent activities and trends, and I think we have at least 2 subtopics today, Carol, if you would.
So we have the final stats in on the down payment assistance program funded with fiscal recovery dollars and 1,672 home buyers purchasing in 35 communities. Just incredible when you think about where prices are and the lack of inventory, but these are the lucky folks that now own their first home. We're now deploying our agency statewide down payment assistance, which is a $15,000 loan versus a grant. We've closed 175 facilities to date through that program. As you mentioned, Sham and our development folks are busy with QAP and closing deals and moving projects along. Over the summer, we closed 3 LIHTC deals and 4 non-LIHTC deals. 4 additional LIHTC deals are in the pipeline, and we hope that they'll close shortly. Construction that's underway right now appears to be on schedule, so we're hopeful that a significant number of units will begin to come online later this year. The leased housing team will be holding a landlord recruitment event. They've done this in the past and have been very successful in enrolling participants to work for Housing Choice Voucher Program participants and some of our special purpose vouchers. So, we'll hold this event in September. The assembly recessed in mid-June, and the GA passed 14 bills in the Speaker's housing package, including legislation to make it easier for homeowners to construct ADUs. This is just going to be another tool to increase the supply of housing in the state. It's just another opportunity for folks who would like to increase housing on their lot and attach to their permanent residence. We are the recipient of 2 new awards. For the 6th year Best Places to Work Award to the agency, and Workside Health Award for all of the good stuff that our HR department is doing. And I did leave a copy of an article that was in Tax Credit Advisor. Tara LaChapelle was profiled in this discussion. So great job, Tara. That's it, Jamie.
Congrats on those awards, and Carol, congrats to you. Thank you so much. Any questions for Carol?
I have just one quick question on the delinquency number. How do you think about that? It seems like the serious delinquency is not that high, but yeah, the delinquency is a little high, so it's very possible.
Yeah, Leslie and I had a bit of a chat about this, and we are equally concerned about that number ticking up. There's some seasonality to our delinquency. I'll have Leslie make a few comments.
Definitely, we're watching it closely. We did see spikes beginning in June and July were hot, and definitely we expected. We had a really good spring season with people getting their income tax returns, and so that seasonal adjustment was significantly lower than we usually see, and then we saw the spikes in June and July. So we're optimistic after the income tax refunds, but now concerned. The categories that we're seeing the biggest increases are the 30-day and the 60-day. That 90-day category really fluctuates. People are in loss mitigation. That process, you know, takes time, and then those numbers go down. So those are up and down, but the 30 and 60 are the biggest concerns. From a national perspective, we don't have data, MBA data yet, or data from CoreLogic. Those are the two aggregators that provide most of the industry data. But what we are hearing is we're also, other HFAs are seeing the same types of increases, but we're also hearing that consumer credit card debt in auto delinquency is on the rise. So I don't know if that is, unfortunately, a precursor to what we may see on the mortgage end.
And just recognizing the work of the loan servicing group in terms of loss mitigation, they work very hard in trying to work with homeowners to use whatever tools they have in their toolkit to ensure that they can get back on track. So the team does a good job.
Are you hearing any concerns from developers on the multifamily side?
We're not. Our portfolio is performing very strong on the multifamily side.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions? Hearing none. Thanks again for the report, Carol. Item 4, approval transfer of physical assets, PPA for St. Elizabeth Assisted Living. I'm going to ask Ann Berman to introduce and explain this item.
Thank you, Chairman. This is Ann Berman. This is an administrative action. So this request is for approval of the transfer of the limited partnership interest in St. Elizabeth Assisted Living, which is a 69-unit assisted living development located in the Elmwood section of Providence. The owner is St. Elizabeth Assisted Living Limited Partnership. Seal Melrose Inc. is the GP, and they are wholly owned by St. Elizabeth Community, which is certainly a well-known and well-heeled entity. The current investor limited partner is an affiliate of Citibank. They hold 99.98% of the interest. The Citibank entity intends to withdraw, and they're going to transfer their partnership interest to the St. Elizabeth community, who will assume all of the existing obligations covering the development. And I will add that the initial compliance period ended at the end of 2018, so it's taken them a few years to get to this point. The assisted living provides 69 units of assisted living. 48 of those units are restricted under the LIHTC program and benefit from Medicaid waivers through the Rhode Island Department of Health. St. Elizabeth Community, who's the transferee, is also the property manager, and they deliver assisted living and nursing home services to this development as well as multiple facilities across the state. So we're requesting the approval of the transfer from the Citibank Fund to St. Elizabeth Community. Happy to answer any questions.
I'll note that this item has been through Credit Committee. Any questions? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
And is there a second?
Second, Maria Berry.
Okay, Kelly. Actually, just any more opportunity for comment or question? Hearing none. Kelly, let's do the vote.
Absolutely. This is Kelly Kenyon-LaValle. Commissioners, all those in favor of approving the transfer of physical assets, TPA, for St. Elizabeth Living in Providence, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say nay. The motion is approved by a unanimous vote.
Thank you. Board Action 5, approval of the aforementioned final 2025 Qualified Allocation Plan, or QAP. And for this item, too, I'm asking you to present, if you would.
I will. And if you don't mind, at the end of the Credit Committee meeting, there was a request for a brief summary of the design and construction changes, which I am not qualified to provide, but Tony is. So I'm going to turn it over to him to give you kind of a brief outline.
Start with that.
And then we'll go into the chat.
That'd be very well. Okay. Thank you for that request, and thank you, Tony.
Okay. Thank you. Tony Bott, Assistant Director of Design and Construction. We went through an extensive process this year with Util Incorporated, Inc., consulting with their team of consultants. We vetted the entire guidelines. We went out and convened many stakeholder groups and interviews with individuals, and this is where we landed. We basically modernized our guidelines with, you know, new electronic table of contents. We made the appearance a little more like an outline specification. We've eliminated all the appendixes we used to have that sort of were very prescriptive. We just added lots of hyperlinks into the guidelines, so you could just click on those and do what you want. We've eliminated all the antiquated requirements, scrubbed their document, took our HDF standards and wove them right into the design standards, so it's a one document now. And bigger items that really impacted were energy efficiency, accessibility, and resiliency, I would say. But I'll first talk about energy efficiency. This year, the state is adopting the International Energy Conservation Code 2024. So in preparation of that, we're requiring that all buildings have to be encouraged to be all electric. If you're not electric, mixed fuel, you can't have gas dryers or gas stoves. You have to upsize your service panels and service rooms to make sure that you can accommodate future electric systems. EV charging systems, 10% of your parking spaces have to be EV charging ready. You have to have solar-ready designs, so you know that means you're going to have to beef up your roof system so they can handle the panels and look at your switch gear and that kind of thing and make sure that's all in line for the future. Sea level rise and resiliency was a big issue. This is one we struggle with a little bit because things are changing so drastically. Luckily, HUD adopted a new floodplain mitigation rule, so we're kind of following that. So anything a tenth of a mile within a 100-year floodplain, you have to design 2 feet above the flood zone. But for your living spaces, any of your service equipment, like your electrical panels, your heating equipment, egress from the building to site and parking all has to be outside of the floodplain. If you're along the coastline, there's a tool called CRMC Storm Tool. We ask that developers utilize that to design for the future. We've seen some drastic changes in flood climate change, and handicapped accessibility was a big one. It was kind of a surprising to us as we went through this process. We found out that we were Rhode Island's dead last in accessible units. So we had a lot of regulators and concerned advocates come to the table. We've actually we've engaged UTIL to have a separate convening process for this, and we're going to create a resource manual, which is going to be helpful for those individuals that are probably 1, 2, 3 family apartments or very mod rehab developments, because our guidelines and the codes do a pretty good job with 4 units and better, because, you know, ADA, fair housing, UFAS, all those things get triggered and they kick in. But if you're designing something smaller, yeah, there really aren't any codes out there. So this resource manual will help with that, but it also help our regular designers. If you want to do more above and beyond code, then this will have some nice, it'll be a nice resource manual. Some of the things that we did do during the process, and we're going through, this is probably one of the last steps we're going to do when we go through the convening process on that second phase, is we're looking at some of the low-cost, high-impact items that we could sprinkle into the guidelines. Some that we have already sprinkled into the guidelines, and it's just a handful of them. We have many more. 1 out of 5 accessible units have to have roll-in showers. We're going to ask all units to have blocking in in bathrooms areas for future grab bars. 4 units or developments that are less than 4 units, we're going to strongly encourage that they design to 5% UFAS units. Same thing with universal design. We're asking them to look into that. Lever handles at all doors, light switches, and at 48 inches above finished floors and 18 inches for the outlets, thermostats 48 inches above floors, doors 34 inches, hygiene coverage 36 inches, so you get a 32-inch clear width, 42-inch hallways minimum, so, you know, it's easy for wheelchairs to navigate, half-inch thresholds at the bathrooms, poles on cabinets and versus knobs. So some of these things are very easy. They're inexpensive for us to weave into the guidelines, and it just makes sense to do up front, I think. The last thing we added was a plan checklist. Our designers, as they submit at the different stages of development, we're going to ask them to fill out that checklist so that we know that they've incorporated all of our standards and say where those items can be found, because sometimes they don't put them in the correct places. So this hopefully will speed up the process as we go through our review process, and it's also a checklist that we can have feedback back to them. So hopefully that'll be a good add. And the last couple of things that are pending, basically, we're waiting for the 2024 IECC to be formally approved by the state. It's been adopted, and we're being told that it's going to be approved with all the appendixes, but there's still some things going on the federal level. When that happens, we may go back and look and see if there's some things we might want to sprinkle in or sprinkle out, you know, take out. And the accessibility stands, like we talked about, with looking at that low-cost, high-impact type items we might sprinkle into the guidelines before we launch it. We're participating, making this part of the next handbook, 2025 handbook. Any questions, comments, concerns?
Before we get into specific questions about any of the items you went through, thank you, Tony. Mm-hmm. Just a couple process questions, if that's okay.
That was so helpful.
Thank you.
First, once these guidelines are embedded in the handbook, how do we enforce them? Meaning, is a guideline a strict rule, or is it guidance?
Yeah.
And then there's interpretation by the agency as to whether it's sufficiently compliant. Yeah. How does that work?
We actually renamed the guidelines to standards. So these are standards. There is language in there, like when we talk about encouraging something, that means that we're just encouraging it. But most of the things are standards, and we expect developments to hit those standards. There is a design waiver process, as always has been. So if your development isn't capable of hitting, or you had some reason that they could submit a design waiver. We did add a lot of language in there for renovation projects to be reviewed case by case, or
you know, they have different measures, you know, that so it's not one size fits all. It's new construction, we will say what needs to be done, and renovations, we try to say what needs to be done as well.
One more process question, then open to the whole board. I'll reserve some of my other questions. Mm-hmm. On the energy efficiency standards,
mm-hmm.
We're adopting the IECC 2024
yes.
standards. Are we entirely endorsing and verbatim adopting them, or are we supplementing them with other points that you all researched?
Okay. As of now, the state has adopted those standards. It's just going through a federal vetting process. I'm hearing that there may be some items that are going to move to the appendix section, but every conversation I've had with the state, they say they're going to adopt it in its entirety. The actual IECC is a little more stringent than what we've got in these standards because we didn't know the timing-wise. That's part of the reason why we're going to go back and look at the standards. If it gets published, if the code gets published before we publish these standards, we'll go back and look at it and make sure that we're consistent with the code.
Got some follow-ups, but I want to open it up.
Mm-hmm.
Questions?
Thank you. This is very, very helpful, mm-hmm. and I think it's important that you have pulled out specific items. Those are the day-to-day items that the people that are living in these houses mm-hmm. are affected on, stuff like that, and I think sometimes that gets lost, so I appreciate updating it and making sure that it's part of it.
Yeah, and that is a short list. There's lots more woven into the standards. I just wanted to give you a kind of a breath of what we've done.
Chairman, please, Jonathan.
I think some of this is due to the question I asked during the committee meeting.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
As I understand it, right, the QAD used to go through the Administrative Procedures Act process some years ago, and you know, and stopped. I'll let lawyers decide, you know, what's the right way to do this and not the right way to do this. But I think for the next time we go through this process, because we'll go through this process on a regular basis.
Annually.
Right. Then we put together a regulatory analysis similar to what's required under the Administrative Procedures Act. Because, you know, we're making a lot of changes, and there's a lot of discussion about, like, you know, what we're hoping to achieve, but, you know, something a little bit more specific and quantitative estimating of what we're thinking those changes will make, I think, would be a more fruitful and productive conversation for the committee meetings and the board meetings. Mm-hmm. I think for this round, way too late to talk about that, but for the next one, I think that would make a lot of sense. Just a comment out there. Thank you.
Use them more. Carol, do you want to say anything about that?
Yeah. I think it's a great suggestion, and I'd like to regroup with Kelly and Corey and discuss it further, what that would roll out and what it would look like.
That sounds great. And in terms of what you both said, sounds like as a subset of that, we want to look at how we produce and adopt the QAP versus administrative procedure. And just make sure we're reviewing that.
Chairman, you're the law school graduate. I'll let those, you know, think through that process. But I think the analysis, you know, because we are going after public comments, we are having an open meeting to discuss it. Like, I mean, there's a lot of overlap in those processes, and it seems like you guys can decide whether, you know, that needs to be replicated, at least in my mind. But the analysis piece mm-hmm. is important for a full discussion.
In terms of impacts and what we're trying to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
So at least both of those two things.
Yes.
Very good. Thank you so much for that. I'm going to ask maybe two more questions, but I want to check with colleagues if you have before I do. Just back on the energy efficiency standards,
mm-hmm.
You mentioned that we are not exactly adopting the IECC 2024 yet because we weren't sure what would come out the other end of the full process at the federal level.
Yeah, because the state hasn't done so. So if you went into our guidelines, there's a link right to the current codes. We're utilizing the current codes today with the knowledge that the 2024 code has been adopted by the state. It's just going to be formalized.
Adopted,
yeah.
Adoption. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Just approximately, what was our process for selecting what we are including for energy efficiency if it's not IECC verbatim?
We actually went through the IECC, and like, for instance, I'll give you an example. I rattled off that 10% of the parking spaces have to be EV ready. I think it's 40% under the IECC code, so it's more stringent. We just wanted to make sure that we're, and we have put language in there that please be aware that the new code will be implemented and there may be more stringent requirements. So you still have to hit code requirements regardless. We're just trying to stay ahead of the curve.
So on the staff's judgment as to what would be reasonable.
Exactly.
Hiring.
Yeah, because
adopted.
Exactly. Well, we didn't know what the timeline was going to be when they would adopt it, but we're assuming it's going to get adopted during somewhere in the process, you know.
Gotcha. And then last question. On both energy efficiency and accessibility, how did you conduct outreach to the constituencies and their representatives that have the greatest interest in these fields just to get feedback?
For the original stakeholder convening, we went out and looked at, we invited HFAs, developers, designers, contractors, tenants even, management agencies, and then we had separate interviews with some of those groups afterwards. We did a very similar thing with the accessibility side of things, but we targeted some of the regulators, some of the actual politicians that were involved, advocates. So we targeted more of that group, but we also still brought in the developers, the management agencies, and some concerned and interested parties, basically.
And I would add to that, it was public meetings.
Mm-hmm.
It was individual interviews. There were surveys that went out. I would say that the outreach process at the beginning took about 90 days.
Yeah, it's pretty extensive.
It was very extensive. And I think our stakeholders really appreciated the engagement.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously you have to sort of separate the wheat from the chaff, right, because some are policy issues, some are more, I have an axe to grind kind of thing, right? So I think our consultant did a great job. They bring a huge amount of experience. Across New England, yep, they were the I-195 consultant. We then, and I think I mentioned this when we met with the credit committee in July, once a really good working draft of the guidelines were produced, we actually sent that back out to stakeholders and said, please give us your feedback. We got a limited number of comments, and it was a pretty broad reach that we aspired to. So, you know, to me, that was an indication that we were hitting the mark.
Mm-hmm.
We did sort of a slightly shrunk down version of that for the accessibility.
Mm-hmm.
But we had two or three public meetings. I think it was two meetings, as well as sort of some individual interviews with folks. And so that process is probably 30 to 60 days from being complete. We have some preliminary assessments, but really not enough to sort of share with the committee. So to Tony's point, I think that resource manual and the suggestions that they're coming, sort of bringing forth, identify what's in the guidelines, what's best practices, where we maybe, you know, need to do a better job, and they're also putting some costs, right? Because, Tony's point about meeting the code, we're also always paying attention to cost containment, right? Total development costs. The more we start to layer in here, the more the code increases, the more challenging it becomes to sort of make this cost effective. So.
Balance everything out, yep.
Truly last. If there's still some outreach and compilation occurring, when will it be finally adopted and incorporated into the manual?
So the basic design and construction guidelines, our goal is to have that manual done at the end of August so we are in a position to release in September. And I think they're like 99.9% there. They're just commas and, you know, hyperlinks, things like that. The resource manual, I would guess, is 60 days behind that.
Yeah, and they're standalone documents. It's in the resource manual, think of it as an appendix or to the guide, to standards. We can launch the standards and then later on add those that resource manual as a, you know, a company document.
Thank you for all of that. Mm-hmm. We appreciate it. Any commissioners with a comment or question? If not, back to you, Anne, for the overall presentation on the QA.
Okay, thank you. Thanks, Tony. That was really helpful.
Well,
so, at the June meeting, the board adopted the draft QAP. It was posted for public comment. We had a public hearing on July 23rd. Public comment period ended on the 24th. We received written comments from four parties as well as some comments from the public hearing. You've got them sort of itemized here, and if it's okay with you, I'll sort of hit the highlights.
Thank you.
And
you'll include the most recent updates coming out of the last
question. Yes, absolutely, absolutely. So we added a reference. We had added points related to the completion of 50% plans. We just added some language that actually identified what that meant. And there's a, as Tony mentioned, there is a literally a chart in the design and construction guidelines that says if you're 50% complete, you've got these 30 plans. We actually reduced points for applications submitted without plans and specifications, and this is an outcome of one of the public comments, which was in regard to sort of the differential between applications that don't have 50% plans and applications that only have schematics, because we really do think it's important that we get better construction pricing. There was another comment in regards to the HES, which I think was a great one. You know, we're now adding points for the location of a development that might be in a health equity zone, but we want to make sure that there's sort of documented relationship with that HES. So we've added that. The next one I think is worth noting is an outcome of the discussion we had with the credit committee, and it's in regard to mixed income developments. We've increased the points for including market rate units from 3 to 5, which was an outgrowth of that conversation. In regard to the provision of supportive services, we had made a change this year to make those services more resident-focused and sort of have developers commit to a certain number of hours. And so we actually added a point category, so we went from a maximum of 4 points to a maximum of 6 points based on the number of hours that either there would be a resident services coordinator or a documented relationship through a memorandum of understanding with a third party. The next one, we did reinstate the Tier 2 guidelines because the IEC hadn't been adopted, but in sort of further discussions with Tony, he reminded me that when the code is increased, they're still Tier 2. They just moved the bar for Tier 2. Instead of it being version 8, it becomes version 9. So it could be that that actually remains in the QAP in some form or fashion going forward, because working with RNC, they are constantly updating what those Tier 2 and Tier 3 standards are based on revisions to the code. And then the last one, which is also an outgrowth of the conversation we had with Credit Committee, was around all electric buildings. Commissioner Orth asked that we add some qualifying language to make sure that if we're doing an all-electric building and they're getting points, that it's actually they're doing an energy-efficient building and not just sticking in some strip heaters for an electric baseboard where you can watch the sparks fly off the meter. So those were sort of the significant changes. If you'd like me to talk about any of the public comment changes, I will. I could go through them, but I'm not sure you want me to recite them all.
Commissioners, what's your preference? The public comments, as you know, are distilled in our notes from the staff. They were reviewed in credit committee, but not at the full board. Maybe the commissioners have any particular comment by any chance that you would like to have further addressed? if you take a look at the notes document, you'll see if you scan to the kind of the second page, the comments begin.
Right. And I will say that there were, you know, some of the comments were adopted into the guidelines. And when we didn't adopt them, I think we had some, we do undergo an analysis to, make sure we're comfortable with the decisions that are being made and set them internally.
Yes. And then with the question on the comments received, or let me broaden that and say questions. Process question then, and what needs to occur following the board's adoption, assuming adoption, to fully finalize?
Sure. So once the board adopts it, we will prepare a memo sort of outlining all of the changes that have been incorporated since it was last approved. We put that memo together. We send it up to the governor's office. He needs to sign the QAP. That's what makes it official. Sort of simultaneous with that, we're working on the developer's handbook. We will now also need to go back and revise the application to address some of these changes and sort of incorporate some of the additional information we need in order to respond to this, with a goal of being in a position to issue the RFP for 2025 credits at the beginning of the year.
Terrific. If there are no further questions or comments, I'll entertain a motion on the QAP.
I'll make a motion to approve. This is Steve.
I've been moved and seconded. I just want to open up one more time in case there are questions or comments, and as we move to the vote. Hearing none, Kelly, let's go ahead and conduct the voice vote.
Absolutely. Thank you. This is Kelly Kenyon-LaValle. Commissioners, all those in favor of approving the final 2025 Qualified Allocation Plan, the QAP, please say aye.
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 All those opposed, please say nay. For the record, the motion is approved by a unanimous vote.
Congratulations. Thank you, Carol, James, and appreciate it, and to the whole team. Tony, thanks for your presentation and your work. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, on to item six. This is the approval of modification for Black Knight Technologies LLC master agreement to add collections module, and for this purpose, I'm going to ask Leslie to present.
Thank you, Chairman. This is Leslie McKnight. This request for action is for approval of an agreement with Black Knight Technologies to modify the existing master agreement by adding the collection service module and an implementation statement of work. Black Knight is the current provider for loan servicing software to Rhode Island Housing. Rhode Island Housing seeks to add a collection service module to its current contract with Black Knight. The service will supplement the current software system and was approved as a sole source procurement pursuant to Rhode Island Housing's purchasing policy on the basis of its compatibility. This addition will allow Rhode Island Housing to implement collection services through the Black Knight software by adding the following functionality. Collections view through AIP. This will provide our mortgage counselors with unlimited queue functionality and step-by-step scripting. Number two, EWM implementation for management of work lists and resource assignments, which will provide greater in-depth understanding of business procedures. Number three, allowable time to call rules. This will ensure that we meet investor and ensure regulatory requirements for our outreach and referral for litigation. Number four, advanced loan search. Number five, borrower direct assistance, which gives us future ability for a chat functionality. The implementation cost of this product is $60,000. The annual cost of the service will be a minimum of $30,000 per year. There are several benefits of implementing this collection service module. Regulatory compliance, scripting, which reduces human error, customer experience, training efficiency, improved call outreach, and referral to loss mitigation, creation of collection, bankruptcy, and loss mitigation queues for calling tracking.
We recommend authorization to execute the modification of the master card statement. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. Questions?
The minimum cost is $30,000 per year. Do we know, is that right around what it expects to be or could it be much higher?
No, it's right around that. It's transactional based and based upon the size of our portfolio and the transaction cost, we expect it to be right around the $30,000.
And is there a motion? Ms. Sarah, is there a second?
Second, this is Steve.
Second. Shot of questions? Hearing none, Kelly, would you please conduct the vote?
Yes, thank you. This is Kelly Kenyon LaValle. Commissioners, all those in favor of approving the modification of Black Knight Technologies LLC Master Agreement number 424-06M to add collections module, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say nay. For the record, the motion is approved by unanimous vote.
Thank you. On to item 7, approval of engagement of low-income housing tax credit and consultant Costello Compliance. This item, I will ask Hope to present, please.
Thank you. This request for action seeks approval to engage Costello Compliance to provide consulting services and expanding our low-income housing tax credit compliance manual. The current manual was completed in 2018 and focused predominantly on federal tax credit compliance. It was one of the first in-depth compliance manuals created by AHFA. It's a very comprehensive guide that has been already shared throughout the industry and has been recognized by several other housing finance agencies. In 2019, we were recognized by NCFAA, receiving a national reward for managing excellence for the publication of the manual. We're now looking to expand it to reflect HUD's HOTMA and INSPIRE initiatives and to include more home program guidance as well as guidance on newer ancillary programs unique to Rhode Island housing. In April of this year, we issued an RFP seeking proposals for assistance in evaluating current compliance policies and updating our compliance manual. We received one proposal from Costello Compliance, which has been thoroughly reviewed by staff, and it was determined that the pricing proposal was reasonable based on our experience with similar consulting arrangements. We're recommending engagement of Costello Compliance at a cost of $30,000 to review and evaluate current compliance policies and update our existing compliance manual. Costello Compliance has been approved by the board in 2017 to create the manual and performed exceptionally well in that engagement. Costello brings over 30 years of direct experience in affordable housing management training and has worked with more than half of the state allocating agencies in the country. Can I ask
a question? Questions? Two was reviewed in committee. So if there are no questions, I'll entertain a motion.
So moved, Jonathan Wilmer.
Is there a second?
Second, this is Steve.
Another shot at questions? Hearing none. Kelly, let's do the vote.
Thank you. Kelly Kenyon LaValle, commissioners, all those in favor of approving the engagement of low-income housing tax credit compliance consultant Costello Compliance, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say nay. For the record, the motion is approved by unanimous vote.
All right. On to action item 8, authority to adopt multifamily development bond, general resolution, and supplemental resolution. And I'm going to ask Kara to present this item.
Thank you, Chairman. This is Kara LaChapelle. This request is for authority to issue up to $185 million in tax-exempt bonds under our multifamily development bond general resolution and the 2024 supplemental resolution. The bonds will be used to fund mortgages for developments that have been previously approved by the board or reviewed by the board and have closed or will be closing in the next 6 to 9 months. We've attached a list of the potential projects that will be included in the upcoming bond issue. We expect to price the first series of bonds by the end of this month for approximately $88 million and anticipate a second issuance either at the end of this year or the beginning of next year, 2025. Happy to answer any questions.
Questions? Kara, you've spoken of two issuances. Is that what you expect to be the totality?
From this approval, yes.
Questions? None, I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve. This is Steve.
Is there a second?
Second, Sarah.
one more pause for questions. Got it. Maria's recusing. Kelly, you've got that?
I do. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Remaining pause for questions. Any questions? Hearing none. Kelly, let's conduct the voice vote, if you would.
Thank you. This is Kelly Kenyon-LaValle. Commissioners, all those in favor of approving the authority to adopt multifamily development bond general resolution and supplemental resolution for series 2024 or $185 million, please say aye, noting Commissioner Barry's recusal.
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say nay. For the record, with four affirmative votes and one recusal, the motion is approved.
Thanks so much. We're at the end of the business agenda for the main Board of Commissioners meeting. Carol, we're going to move on to another meeting, just so folks in the audience and on the phone are aware, that's the Housing Trust Fund. Before I do that, anything, Carol?
Nothing further.
On the main agenda. Very good. Kelly? Good. So there being no further business, I'm going to request a motion to adjourn this main meeting. Is there a motion?
Motion to adjourn. This is Steve.
Have a second.
Okay,
Kelly, would you please conduct the vote?
Absolutely. This is Kelly Kenyon-LaValle. Commissioners, all those in favor of adjourning, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, please say nay. For the record, the motion is approved by unanimous.
Carol, do you want to take a brief break?
And allow people who are going, please, yes. Sal, would you stop the recording, please?